Tuesday night.
Hey everyone, and welcome to a What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. Today on the show, we're going to break down last night, which was the final home game of the season. Spurs taking on Aston Villa and losing 2-1, thanks to a bit of an implosion, really. Probably quite important that we go through the whole of the day, because there was a lot of nice stuff, but there was a lot of stuff that got a bit ugly towards the end. On the show today, Jude Summerfield, Hunter Godson. Guys, a question for you to start. I woke up this morning, and you know when you've had a rough evening and someone's given you some bad news, and then you wake up in the morning and it feels like there's still a cloud on you, and you're like, I'm in a grumpy mood. I've had that this morning. I've literally woken up this morning feeling absolutely rubbish. Am I on my own, or is that something you guys have had as well?
You're definitely not on your own, mate. I really struggled to get out of bed today, and that's not just because I popped my shoulder out last night. I just was like, just more. The fallout is going to happen today, basically. So I think that was like that. That's the realization that now we get to sort of sit there and pick it apart.
Yeah, I mean, we recorded the last pod and managed to kind of be, I thought it was a fairly upbeat one. And then the moment that we dropped the pod, the news broke about possibly our best ever player.
Yeah, I mean, I felt more optimistic when and clambering out of bed.
Did you?
No, I mean, I felt more, so. there's very little at the moment to really hang your hat on. But we do try and make it quite optimistic, I feel. You were still going on about maybe top four a few weeks ago.
I was trying my best. You really were. I was like, because I think that's ultimately what you get, like, that's the whole point of football, right?
Yeah, of course.
The whole point of it is, particularly when you're a Spurs fan, the whole point is that you're meant to sort of, like, we are allowed to be ruthlessly pessimistic and at the same time ridiculously optimistic. Like, that's the whole point of doing it. And what was interesting last night is that we saw the full spectrum of that over the course of probably 3 hours. You saw, like, amazing optimism, fans so happy to be back in the stadium, and kind of all this build up, we're like, do you know what, let's just enjoy this one together. And then at the end we saw the kind of the bottom of the curve, because that wasn't pretty, was it?
No, and you feel like there's a multitude of issues here that we'll go into, but I've been watching it. I just felt really sorry for the people who had paid 60 quid to be there, to be honest with you. That's who I really was feeling for, because it just felt like everything that has been wrong for this whole season came to a head, and it was on them in the stadium to sort of get their point across. And, you know, and I just thought 60 quid and you get to watch that. And I've seen the other things. I've watched other clubs have their 10,000 fans in. That's really inspired some great performances. And yeah, you know, it's just one of those that I think we just have to try and move on from it.
Yeah, I suppose the important question there is, I've never really been someone that is, on a personal level, I'm not someone that boos at games. I'm not someone that boos teams off. But that doesn't mean that I would ever say that someone else shouldn't. And I suppose when you're paying 60 quid, I mean, it's just a fact of life that was the most expensive ticket in this match round in the Premier League. Do you have the right to, do you think?
I think sort of irregardless of the fee you pay for a match, you should be able to make your voice heard, really. I think in this sort of scenario, it gives fans more license to do that sort of thing, to be honest, because you know, they've had a few dung sandwiches thrown at them over lockdown and over the past year or so. So I think that's absolutely fine. And especially when you see, like, clubs like, I think Burnley might have let their fans in for free.
Yeah.
Like, Everton had tickets from £20 to £30. Other clubs are just making that chance, or like taking the opportunity to make football affordable for fans when, you know, at the first sign of it coming back regularly. So, yeah, I think if Spurs fans want to boo, they can do it. I mean, I'd never be one to shout out or like call a player a knobhead or, you know.
I would never call anyone a knobhead.
Yeah. I just wouldn't do that, you know. But, you know, that's just a personality trait. And other people would, you know, they can do the you can see me, I can see you thing as much as they like.
God, it did have, there were shades of that last
night. What I'd say about the booing, although I'm not, I have to say, I'm not 100% even convinced that the booing was at the players. That's what struck me really quickly, was like the booing seemed like what I sort of said there, and like an amalgamation of everything that's gone wrong this season. And this is our one chance where we've been in close proximity with Daniel Levy. We're going to let him know that we're really disappointed, not just with this performance. Obviously, this performance is up there with the worst this season, but just we're really disappointed with the current situation of the club and the way that things have been allowed to get like this and the decisions that have been made over the last year and a half. And I think good on them for making their voice heard. If the players took it badly, you know, that's just part and parcel of being a footballer, I guess.
It would just be like quite a single lensed view to be like, this is, oh, it's all about the players, isn't it?
Yeah. No, but I think that can quickly become the narrative. And I think that's quite, I think that's something we have to work against, because I don't, although I think the people being like, look, bad performance, blah, blah, but Spurs fans have seen terrible performances over the years. It's, for me, it felt very pointed at, this is our opportunity to be in a stadium with the leadership here at the club, and we're going to make our voices heard. And and they've paid their money to be there, so they have every right to, as Jude said, you know. So good on them, power to them. And you know, it's just one of those that Spurs just have to really act quickly in the next couple of weeks to put things right. And there are lots of situations they need to put right.
Right, slight break in proceedings. You'll be delighted to hear that once again we're a sponsored podcast. I know, this ragtag bunch having a sponsor, mental, but this podcast is now brought to you by Manscaped.com, or brought to you again by Manscaped.com. We've been very fortunate to have been sponsored by them in the past as well. And I suppose, being the bastions of sartorial elegance and male grooming that we are, it kind of makes sense that Manscaped have come to us as the place to advertise their trimmers for scaping the areas around your prized assets. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code 90min20 at Manscaped.com. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
I think that's a really interesting point, Hunter, about the idea of mixing narratives. I think Ryan Mason said fans are emotional, entitled to be emotional, given kind of where things are at. I feel like if players were upset, Jude, about the idea of, I mean, this is a ridiculous comparison, but you know when you're playing sort of seven a side or something.
Yeah, of course, mate.
Even I mean, you're a top baller.
Yeah, of course.
But even down to us on a Friday night, if we have a kick about, sometimes you get a bit caught up in it and you get a bit of red mist comes down and you can't even, like, someone will give you a little niggly foul and you can't even stop yourself, not you personally, but anyone can't stop themselves on a seven-a-side kickabout from getting a bit irate. So I can imagine that when you've got 10,000 people booing, you might take it a little bit badly. And perhaps it's almost unfair to expect people in that moment, or players in that moment, to be able to remove themselves from the situation. But at the same time, like, this for football fans, this has probably been the worst experience. I'm not saying Spurs' performances, I'm just saying that as a football fan, it's been the worst experience we've ever had in our lifetimes, right? Not being able to go to the stadium and support your team, not really having any way to try and connect, or not even having an outlet for the to kind of get across the things that you feel. And at the same time, football occupies such a big part of people's identity. To lose the thing that they feel most passionate about, and then suddenly
having one opportunity to get in there and say whatever you want to say. It's kind of, perhaps it's almost missing the point to feel like it was aimed at the players.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be, if that's what they think, that's got to be like a wake-up call for them, isn't it? Because, you know, if they're oblivious to like how fans have viewed the treatment of them from the club, then it does show that the disconnect is larger than just club fans, and it might even be like players and fans, you know, like taking the lap of honor into account as well. So yeah, they just need to, you know, wake up and smell the coffee in that regard, I suppose.
I think it started badly though, didn't it? Because although fans were saying, "Oh, we're really happy to be back in the stands. It's amazing to be back in this beautiful stadium that we've built." But why have we been put up in the gods? Why have we kept the corporate sponsor sheets on the bottom tier to keep us away from the ground, to keep us away from the players? Is that why it's there? Or is it just because it's cheaper to keep them there and put us up there? Instantly, that's one of those tin-eared decisions that as a fan, you sit there and go, "I've paid £60 for this. I want to be in the seat that's worth 60 quid, or at least I want to be near the players." Because, and it felt like just a very good visual metaphor when Harry Kane was standing sort of at the end of the game looking up at the fans, and there was a big three or four corporate sections between him and the fans. I thought, what a lovely, horrible metaphor for where we're at the moment, where there's just this massive disconnect between what's happening on the pitch and off the pitch and with the management and everything within.
Is it silly to think that there's kind of like three spheres now? As in like Jude was saying, that maybe it's something that for us as Spurs fans, we'll all just kind of have to sort of get on board with, that we have to, as fans, we'll have to maintain two relationships now. One to match day and one to who Tottenham Hotspur are, or are they still one and the same? We just need to kind of like bring them back together.
That is,
oh, it just pained you there. Yes.
It's a hard question. It's a hard question because I think people are starting to see as more separate things, aren't they? People are starting to see the club as a business, and then the match day experience as like the sort of almost respite from the business that we get the rest of the time. Although we don't want it, I think it is starting to feel more and more like two separate entities that we have to treat it that way.
Well, I think you'd be undeniable, right? I don't think anyone could claim that if you have Lady Gaga playing at our stadium for 2 weeks or whatever it is, or like you have Bon Jovi or Monster Trucks or NFL, whatever it is, just on a personal level, I don't think that represents me as a Spurs fan. You know, that's phenomenal for Tottenham as a business, because these are huge artists who will, I'm sure, bring in a huge amount of revenue. But when it comes to me watching Spurs for 90 minutes and the things that I hold really dear, which are the sound of seats rattling as a ball gets pinged out to a player that I love watching on the wing and everyone gets to their feet, like, that's the version of Spurs that, like, it really matters to me on an emotional level. Like, I live and breathe for that on match day. It kind of almost, perhaps maybe it's not as negative. I suppose the argument would be from the other side would be that everything we do, like around creating resource and finance and stuff, is so that we can seed it back into winning.
All I'd say is like things like monster trucks and, you know, gigs and things like that, it's about building Tottenham into being a bigger club and a bigger brand, isn't it? So it's not really about relating to a fan by, you know, getting Guns and Roses to come and perform. I don't think, you know, 10% off. I don't know if Slash is going to come out wearing a Spurs shirt or something like that, but
Slash, I mean, on the Skywalk.
Yeah. That'd be sick, to be fair. That'd be sick. That would get the fans back on side, wouldn't they? If they just play at the top of the stadium.
Oh, Jesus. I think, yes, it's good that we have those things. I genuinely do think it's good that we have those things because it is a viable way of creating wealth. But you tell the fan, oh, that's what we're doing. And they go, right, okay. Are we seeing that ambition off the pitch, on the pitch? That ambition to get the NFL in, to get Guns N' Roses, get Lady Gaga in, blah, blah, to fill the stadium throughout the summer, to get Harlequins a few games there. Then is that money generated and ambition to create Tottenham the brand, is that then replicated on the pitch with the decisions? And you could argue Jose Mourinho is, you know, one of the highest paid managers in the world. But then I guess it comes down to decision making. I think 90% of people could have said Jose Mourinho is a bad fit for Tottenham because of the way that we played football. So I mean, it feels like we go a bit in circles here because it's the same decision makers that's been for many, many years now. So, it's a difficult one.
I suppose we should touch on the
football,
the game. Actually, just before we do, just because Jude, you mentioned it earlier on, the lap of appreciation wasn't ideal the way that played out.
No, it seemed staggered and a little dysfunctional, and sort of seeing players trot out almost one by one and not really looking like they knew it was all planned was a bit grim to see. And I think, you know, we can go on about, you know, how, you know, Tottenham haven't run the club very well and little things like that, but I think those are sort of the basics that you should have in place for your final home game of the season if you've got fans in attendance as well. And that just could have done with a little more organisation, I think.
It's another good metaphor, isn't it? It was an evening of visual metaphors of like...
I wish Tottenham weren't so metaphorical, man.
there's Harry Kane out on the pitch on his own, leading the team. Oh, there's a few players with him who are there as well. And then the others sort of came out every now and then, a bit late, caught up with him. And you just sort of think, what sort of communication has gone into that so that the players didn't know they had to do their lap of honour, so that the players didn't know there was like an award ceremony? It felt like one of those things where everything on the day, everything went wrong. Even down to, I saw someone's burger was at the stadium was like the most undercooked burger I've ever seen. It was just raw in the middle. I saw another guy who'd snuck into the like corporate bit and drunk 10 pints. I was like, this, oh, what's man. Happened? What has happened tonight at the stadium? I've said it on this already. It just felt like it encompassed the season. Last night was like the brilliant moment and then just weird, bad defending, chaos off the pitch, anger, disappointment, just all rolled into one fun evening against Aston Villa.
Just really want us to be, I really, really want fans to be sort of to feel that super close-knit connection. It's the most fun thing, isn't it? You know, like when you come away from a game and like you're all singing from the same hymn sheet, you're all like super engaged. You want to put the boot in on other fans on social media because you're so unified. And like I think back to sort of beating Man City and the way it was when we beat Man City in the quarterfinal of the Champions League. Kind of like the optimism and the connection and just seeing like just everyone so intertwined and completely like on the same page with what we were trying to do there. It was just, yeah, I do pine for that a little bit.
I said to you last night, didn't I? I think we were at a crossroads a couple of weeks ago. And it feels like now the decision is that this things have gone not in our favour. And Europa League now looks basically out of touch. Europa Conference is still on, but really, there is a question whether you want it. There is no way now to save this other than appoint a manager quite quickly and give him the power to bring in the players that he wants so that he's not sat there in 6 months going, well, I couldn't bring in and that's why we're here. Because then it's the same cycle over and over. And whether the problem is the club will have to sell to buy. There's a few assets at the club. You imagine players like Lamela will be moved on. Sissoko probably be moved on. Maybe Winks, who had a very disappointing game yesterday.
Rough night for Winks.
Yeah, really rough night for Winks. But the only way now for me, from my perspective, to salvage this is to bring the manager in and give him what he wants. And then you can say, at least we tried, at least we went for it.
I've sort of led us so far off piste with our opening statements that I've barely left any time for actually discussing the game. But sod it, we'll do one good thing, which I suppose we've got. Like, if we go good, we'll go Stevie in the first 10 minutes. It was such a joy seeing him score that goal, wasn't it? Like, you just saw the relief washing over him when he spanked that into the top corner.
Yeah, and he's been someone who's just not been around at all for months, it seems. I think he might have had a few sub appearances under Mason, but I couldn't tell you when he's had like a defining impact on a game. But to see him absolutely leather one in, it was quite similar to the one he got against United in that first game back after COVID all kicked off last year. So he was like a nice goal scorer for that first goal back in the stadium. And it was just like, just purely through persistence that he got that chance, wasn't it? Which was like, just nice to see that sort of effort going into getting in the end of something and chasing a lost cause and turning it into a nice goal.
I think he's going to be a dream for a manager who comes in. You've got a young guy who's raw, but could be refined, got bags of pace and has got really good work ethic as well. There's potential there, isn't there?
That's what Drew says there, spot on. He created that goal himself. He's bouncing off people. His touch was good. He gets through, and then the finish is pure frustration for me. Just absolutely lashing it in. Yeah, yeah. But it's a brilliant finish. Absolutely, take nothing away. Like, absolutely brilliant finish. But it was like the determination, the grit, the skill, and then the technique to finish. Like you said, Hainsey, there's a player in there, and we've been saying it all season. It's a shame that we haven't seen him more, for me.
So, the bad, we've got to talk about. Oh man, I feel like we've done the ugly. So let's talk in the bad. Let's talk about the way we kind of just completely imploded then off the back of that. Structure didn't seem to be there. Looked like we were at sixes and sevens a little bit.
Spurs started pretty well. They were really intense. They obviously got the first goal. And then things just really changed, and there was no intensity to their play. And I think we all love Sergio Reguilón quite a lot, but that's an outrageous own goal.
One of the best.
Honestly one of the best in Premier League history. If own goal, could try it another 1,000 times and he wouldn't get it right.
It'll be on one of those video. It will go back VHS. And be put on those VHS videos from the 90s. That's how good it was. People go and re-record them to stick that on.
It's going to be a Doctor Who episode of him in the TARDIS. We've got to go back through time to add Sergio Reguilón's 20-yard top bin screamer against his own side to VHS's.
Those freak incidences can really affect teams, and it did. It just completely everything fell apart after that.
I feel awful for him as well, because I do actually feel like he's someone who wears his heart on his sleeve. Like, you saw off the back of it, he was crushed.
Yeah,
absolutely crushed.
I mean, that one is just like one of those freak ones. The second one can be blamed on the first one because people had sort of gone so far into their shells. He's looking for a ball out. There's no one down the line. Son's not coming short down the line. There's no midfielders come inside to pick up the ball. The centre back hasn't dropped because he doesn't want it. So he's trying to loft it down the line. It's his fault. Don't get me wrong. It's his fault, that second one. You can't do it the first time, then do it again. But I thought it was just like, it was a victim of that first goal, in that everyone had gone so far into their shells that no one wanted the ball to feet anymore. No one was willing to take it out. And the bounce got unlucky that he got, but it's just like one of those nights that he'll just want to forget forever, just get home and delete it from your brain. But Ollie Watkins, good finish, and it didn't get better for this first half, but we improved after half time. We came out with a bit between our teeth. Arguably, this is where Stevie needs to work on it. He should be scoring when the ball drops to him after Reguilon does very well. But then it just sort of drifted after that until Ndombele came on.
Oh, save him. Save him for the beautiful, because that just gave me everything I wanted. Yeah. In the ugly section, one thing I did just want to kind of ask you guys about was the actual team selection. In my eyes, Ryan Mason could do no wrong, right? This guy has stepped up at a time when we needed someone to step up and just give us something to kind of like hold on to as we get towards the end of the season. And he's done, I personally believe he's in the right to do what he wants. Having said that, team selection was interesting, wasn't it?
I can't understand Harry Winks over Ndombele. I'll never understand it personally. Dele looked knackered from the get-go, looked really tired, was getting the ball caught under his feet, was dispossessed maybe 6 or 7 times in the first half. And I know we keep him on because we know that he's got that bit, but this is a guy who hasn't played very much football. So I was like, okay, maybe he needs a little rest. And then, well, it's just Winks and Ndombele, isn't it? It is Winks and Ndombele. We're going to wonder what if in all these games that people have played over Ndombele, because he has been the only player who's willing to take the ball, who can take the ball under pressure, turn and find space. And we missed that again yesterday because Villa pressed well. John McGinn, brilliant player, marvellous, what's his surname?
Nakamba.
Had a really good game. And Jack Grealish, they go together and what we've seen against Leeds, City and Aston Villa now is when we're pressed, we cannot handle it. So, yeah.
Grealish was so good on the ball.
Excellent.
He was excellent.
I was actually very relieved to see how good he was because I really want him to go to the Euros for England. Yeah. I thought he's unplayable. He is so good.
Genuinely. He's so strong.
Yeah.
What's amazing is people try and bounce him and they end up flying off him. I saw Højbjerg a couple of times go and try and give him a smack and he would just sort of bounce Højbjerg and carry on. He's deceptively big. He's incredibly strong. His control is phenomenal. You know those players when you're watching someone around the edge of the box and you're thinking, oh God, we might give a pen away here. He not only makes you think you might give a pen away, but he also makes you think he's going to bloody score. He's just going to drift. He's going to drift past this defender, and either they're going to take him down, or he's going to put in a cross that's going to end in a goal, or he's going to just ping one into the far corner. But I do want to let's do the beautiful because I do want to talk about Ndombele. I'm wondering whether we're at a point now. Maybe. We all have no idea about how he trains, about what his kind of like, what his work ethic is like. We can only speculate from the outside, right? But he is the most wonderfully gifted footballer, or one of the most naturally gifted footballers I think we've probably ever seen, or at least seen in recent history over the course of the last 20 years, getting close to Dembele in terms of his ability to ghost past a player and receive a ball under pressure. Do we just need to find a way to get him into that team and get him performing for 90 minutes by hook or by crook? Or does he need to slot into part of a wider philosophy? I suppose it's a really difficult question to answer, but like, I guess it's where we're at with him right now, right?
I think and it will come down to the manager that we bring in. Because if the manager comes in who has a really strong philosophy, well, it's not going to be about Ndombele, it's going to be about the philosophy. Personally, I think he can fit into anyone who wants to play a possession style of football. He can do that because he is our only player who can take the ball under pressure. So you need those players. If you're going to play possession where you play it out from the back, you absolutely need those players. They're key. And I mean, for me, Ryan Mason had what's he had 8 games in charge. I would have started him in every single one, but clearly something's happened. It's just disappointing because it looks like we're going to miss out, and you're going to be left with that. What if he was in the squad? Because he's a must start. He was so brilliant when he came on yesterday. It was such
a joy, wasn't he?
It was like a breath of fresh air.
The dummy to just drift. You know, when he was being pressed and he literally went 2 yards the wrong way so he could send whoever it was off to Sainsbury's and then like drifted away from 2 challenges. You're like, we're crying out for that. I know everyone calls it press resistance, but it's just like, more than anything, it's someone who can just receive a ball and look comfortable wherever they are on the pitch. I never think he's going to lose the ball. Never.
Well, there was Højbjerg and Winks yesterday who just didn't want to show for it at all. I mean, Højbjerg's not... I mean, I think he's played like ball-playing midfielder, but he's a bit more like, let's go, let's have it, you know? A little less... and then if Winks isn't showing for the ball, then I'm not really sure what on earth he's in the team to do. And sort of regardless of, you know, whatever manager comes in or whatever philosophy, Ndombele just has to be playing regularly. Like, I'm not going to start slagging off Ryan Mason, but like Ndombele started that Southampton game. And then I think Ndombele's played about maybe just over half an hour of football since then. And he hasn't started a game, which is just, I don't understand that sort of those selections. Like, I don't know why he wouldn't play in the Leeds game where things are going to be hectic and you need someone to be just a cool head in midfield and keep the ball. I don't know why he wouldn't play against a good Aston Villa team. Like, we got beaten by like a good... I know Spurs shot themselves in the foot a lot, but like Grealish, Watkins, Begin, literally fabulous players. And I'd take any one of them, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd take all of them.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a really odd one. And I don't know how they get a number like Højbjerg and Lo Celso into the same team. They're an alley as well, Dele Alli. So there's going to be like chopping and changing, but you know, there's enough games in the season for everyone to be playing regularly, you know what I mean? And just for Ndombele to have that small amount of time is, I just don't understand that. I just don't get it.
Do you think this is an opportunity now to just smack the reset button and just go, right, draw a line, like, we've got to finish whatever chapter this is, whatever narrative this is. We've just got to hit stop and be like, right, finish that season. It was grim. It was horrible. There was no fans in the stands. Like, we weren't able to actually sort of gain an advantage from being at home like every other club in the Premier League. We've gone through the stuff with the ESL. We've gone through the stuff with changing manager. We've gone through various other things, COVID, the difficulties now with all the reports about Harry Kane. Like, is it just a chance to reset, or do we actually have to sort of take some of this into next season?
I think you have to take the... What you have to do is to try and remove the emotion from it. That's what Spurs have to do. But the only way they can do that for me is by appeasing the fans. It's very all well and good saying we'll draw a line under it, but if we lose Harry Kane, we're instantly half the team than when we are. And don't get it twisted. Heung-min Son has also stalled on his contract talks. And you sort of wonder, oh, well, what's he waiting for? I wonder. So it's all well and good saying yes. And I've totally, as a fan, I'm going to draw a line over the season and be like, I'm never going to refer to the season again. This will be the season known as, when you look at it on my Wikipedia page of Tottenham, it'll just be NA, not available, no, never existed. not sure what happened in that season. I think everyone just got on with their lives that season. But yeah, it's what I said before, Hensley. The only way to do that now, bring in the new manager who the fans agree with. They're not going to agree with who they bring in. It's as simple as that. You've seen the polls. No one can agree on who we should bring in. No one has a clue who we should bring in. There isn't a clear candidate. And then give him the money to buy some players that appease the fans. That's the only way to do it. And get rid of some of the considered dead weight. And then maybe you can start to rebuild. But if we have to force Harry Kane to stay, you were in the same situation as last year. Do you know what I mean? Where you're going to have sort of rumblings in the background of people being like, I don't want to be here. And although it hasn't impacted his season, clearly he's had one of his best seasons ever. And he's a consummate professional. He'd never down tools. It's just one of those things of you need that equilibrium, and forcing people to stay doesn't necessarily bring that. And it's not a great start for a new manager either.
What do you reckon, Jude? Anything to add there?
I think he's nailed it pretty much. The club just need to be nice and decisive and, you know, pick one of the billion managers they've got shortlisted, it seems. Back him, clear the deadwood, and yeah, I honestly hope Spurs fans just have like a nice summer once this this is all done. Like, yeah, I suppose we got Euros as well.
The Euros
but, like,
is such a happy distraction.
Yeah,
it's such like a brilliant distraction after this year. It's like, oh yeah, just forget about it completely and try and enjoy England. If not, just throwing pints in people's faces, and it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, let us just enjoy watching Harry with a smile on his face. Just
with all
give
the
us,
city
give
boys,
us a summer of that.
With all the city lads.
No!
Foden just giving him
me.
A big hug. You, I just
watch me. Just watch me. Don't touch him. Don't touch him.
I just wanted to quickly go through, and this might be something you're not interested in, but I just quickly wanted to go through the squad.
I'm always
and just,
interested.
And just see who you two would be interested, or who you think we should try and move on from the squad as a
great question.
As a because there's a lot of chat about Deadwood, and I as much as I agree that there is, I also think that there's some really quality players who have had really bad seasons.
Do you want to do a pod on this?
Let's do a pod on it.
Should
Let's
we do a pod on it?
Yeah,
no, I feel like because we last year when we got into this, well, I mean, the football got cancelled, so it's bloody impossible to do any pods, but I feel like we should definitely do a review of the season.
Definitely, yeah.
And definitely do kind of like a little bit of a breakdown of everything that was good, everything that was bad, etc. over the course of the season. I think there's definitely a discussion around the squad in terms of like what happens now. And then also we're going to have to, I mean, fingers crossed, we know who the new head coach is within the space of the next 4 or 5 days.
Well, they said before the end of the season, didn't they?
At one point, then so it seems like it's conflicting a little bit.
Yeah, and no doubt we'll have to discuss the inevitable meltdown that happens when a new kit comes out and then half the fan base loses its mind.
Well, that got delayed. No, that got delayed, didn't it? That was supposed to come out last night as well.
Life. Right, okay. Well, thanks so much for listening as always, guys. If you haven't subscribed, we'd appreciate if you'd think about doing so. If you haven't left us a review or a rating, if you do that as well, that'd be amazing. We'll be here for a while. I'm sure we'll be here for the whole of the summer, drifting in and out, bringing
Harry,
loads
Harry
of Spurs
Kane
content.
Watch.
Harry Kane watch during the Euros. Yeah, exactly. We'll catch you very, very soon, but thank you so much as always for listening. What a thing.